they all replied in unison. "Of course not," said Combe. "Should I ring for coffee?"
"Yes, please," said Nina.
Combe ordered coffee, waffles, and a bottle of brandy. And while they waited, Nina enlisted their help to locate some shears so that she could cut up the hotel towels for bandages. Once a pair had been found, she took Inej into the bathroom to see to her wounds. When a knock sounded at the door, they all tensed, but it was only their meal. Combe greeted the maid and insisted that he could manage the cart so that she wouldn't see the strange company that had assembled in his rooms. As soon as the door closed, Jesper jumped up to help him wheel in a silver tray laden with food and stacks of dishes of porcelain so fine it was almost transparent. Weiland hadn't eaten off dishes like these since he'd left his father's house. He realized Jesper must be wearing one of Combe's shirts. It was too big in the shoulders and too short in the sleeves. "What is this place anyway?" Weiland asked, looking around the vast room decorated almost entirely in purple.
"The Ketterdam suite, I believe," said Combe, scratching the back of his neck. "It's considerably finer than my room at the University District Inn."
Nina and Inej emerged from the bathroom. Nina heaped a plate with food and plunked down beside Matthias on the couch. She folded one of the waffles in half and took a huge bite, wiggling her toes in bliss.
"I'm sorry, Matthias," she said with her mouth full. "I've decided to run off with Jesper's father. He keeps me in the deliciousness to which I have become accustomed."
Inej had removed her tunic and wore only her quilted vest, leaving her brown arms bare. Strips of towel were tied at her shoulder, both of her forearms, her right thigh, and her left shin.
"What exactly happened to you?"
Jesper asked her as he handed his father a cup of coffee on a delicate saucer. Inej, perched in an armchair next to where Kuwe had settled himself on the floor.
"I made a new acquaintance."
Jesper sprawled out on a settee, and Weiland took the other chair, a plate of waffles balanced on his knee. There was a perfectly good table and chairs in the suite's dining room, but apparently none of them had an interest in it. Only Combe had taken a seat there, coffee beside him, along with the bottle of brandy. Kaz remained by the window, and Weiland wondered what he saw through the glass that was so compelling.
"So," Jesper said, adding sugar to his coffee, "other than Inej making a new pal, what the hell happened out there?"
"Let's see," said Nina. "Inej fell 20 stories.
We put a serious hole in my father's dining room ceiling," Weiland offered.
"Nina can raise the dead," said Inej.
Matthias's cup clattered against his saucer. It looked ridiculous in his huge hand.
"I can't raise them. I mean, they get up, but it's not like they come back to life, I don't think. I'm not totally sure."
"Are you serious?" said Jesper.
Inej nodded.
"I can't explain it, but I saw it."
Matthias's brow was furrowed.
"When we were in the Ravken quarter, you were able to summon those pieces of bone."
Jesper took a gulp of coffee.
"But what about the lake house? Were you controlling that dust?"
"What dust?" asked Inej.
"She didn't just take out a guard. She choked him with a cloud of dust."
"There's a family graveyard next to the Hendrix Lake House," said Weiland, remembering the gated plot that abutted the western wall. "What if the dust was, well, bones, people's remains?"
Nina set down her plate.
"That's almost enough to make me lose my appetite."
She picked it up again.
"Almost."
"This is why you asked about Perim changing Agrisha's power," said Kuwe to Matthias.
Nina looked at him.
"Can it?"
"I don't know.
You took the drug only once. You survived the withdrawal. You are a rarity. Lucky me.
Is it so bad? Matthias asked.
Nina plucked a few crumbs from her lap, returning them to her plate. To quote a certain big blonde lump of muscle, it's not natural. Her voice had lost its cheery warmth. She just looked sad.
Maybe it is, said Matthias.
Aren't the Corporalki known as the Order of the Living and the Dead? This isn't how Grisha power is supposed to work.
Nina, Inej said gently, Param took you to the brink of death. Maybe you brought something back with you.
Well, it's a pretty rotten souvenir.
Or perhaps Jell extinguished one light and lit another, said Matthias.
Nina cast him a sidelong glance. Did you get hit on the head? He reached out and took Nina's hand. Weiland suddenly felt he was intruding on something private.
I am grateful you're alive, he said. I am grateful you're beside me. I am grateful that you're eating.
She rested her head on his shoulder. You're better than waffles, Matthias Helvar. A small smile curled the Fjärden's lips.
Let's not say things we don't mean, my love.
There was a light tapping at the door. Immediately, they all reached for their weapons. Colm sat frozen in his chair. Kaz gestured for him to stay where he was and moved silently toward the door. He peered through the peephole.
It's Specht, he said.
They all relaxed, and Kaz opened the door. They watched in silence as Kaz and Specht exchanged harried whispers. Then Specht nodded and disappeared back toward the lift.
Is there access to the clock tower on this floor?
Kaz asked Colm.
At the end of the hall, said Colm. I haven't gone up. The stairs are steep.
Without a word, Kaz was gone. They all stared at one another for a moment and then followed, filing past Colm, who watched them go with weary eyes. As they walked down the hall, Weiland realized that the entire floor was dedicated to the luxury of the Ketterdam suite. If he was going to die, he supposed it wouldn't be the worst place to spend his last night. One by one, they climbed a twisting iron staircase to the clock tower and pushed through a trap door. The room at the top was large and cold, taken up mostly by the gears of a huge clock. Its four faces looked out over Ketterdam and the gray dawn sky. To the south, a plume of smoke rose from Black Veil Island. Looking northeast, Weiland could see the Geld Canal, boats from the Fire Brigade and the Stadwatch surrounding the area near his father's house. He remembered the shocked look on his father's face when they'd landed in the middle of his dining room table. If Weiland hadn't been so terrified, he might well have burst out laughing. It's shame that eats men whole. If only they'd set the rest of the house on fire. Far in the distance, the harbors were teeming with Stadwatch boats and wagons. The city was pocked with Stadwatch purple, as if it had caught a disease.
Specht says they've closed the harbors and shut down the brow boats, said Kaz. They're sealing the city. No one will be able to get in or out.
Ketterdam won't stand for that, said Inej. People will riot.
They won't blame Van Eck.
Weiland felt a little ill. They'll blame us. Jesper shook his head.
Even if they put every Stadwatch grunt on the street, they don't have the manpower to lock up the city and search for us.
Don't they? Said Kaz. Look again.
Jesper walked to the west-facing window where Kaz was standing. All the saints and your Aunt Eva, he said on a gust of breath.
What is it? Asked Weiland as they peered through the glass.
A crowd was moving east from the barrel across the Zelver district.
Is it a mob? Asked Inej.
More like a parade, said Kaz.
Why aren't the Stodwatch stopping them? Weiland asked, as the flood of people passed unhindered from bridge to bridge through each barricade. Why are they letting them through?
Probably because your father told them to, Kaz said.
As the throng drew closer, Weiland heard singing, chanting, drums. It really did sound like a parade. They poured over Zelver Bridge, streaming past the hotel as they made their way to the square that fronted the exchange. Weiland recognized Pekka Rollins's gang leading the march. Whoever was up front wore a lion skin with a fake golden crown sewn onto its head.
Razor gulls, Inej said, pointing behind the dime lions. And there are the liddies.
Harley's pointers, Jesper said. The black tips.
It's all of them, said Kaz.
What does it mean? Asked Kuwe. The purple bands. Each member of the mob below wore a strip of purple around his upper left arm.
They've been deputized, said Kaz. Spect says word is out all over the barrel. The good news is they want us alive now, even Matthias. The bad news is they've added bounties for the shoe twins we're traveling with, so Kuwe's face and Wyland's are gracing the city walls, too.
And your merchant council is just sanctioning this, said Matthias. What if they start looting, or there's a riot?
They won't. Rollins knows what he's doing. If the Stodwatch had tried to lock down the barrel, the gangs would have turned on them. Now they're on the right side of the law, and Vanek has two armies. He's pinning us in.
Inej drew a sharp breath. What? Asked Weiland, but when he looked down at the square, he understood. The last group in the parade had come into view. An old man wearing a plumed hat was leading them, and they were cawing at the top of their lungs like crows. The dregs, Kaz's gang. They had turned on him. Jesper slammed his fist against the wall.
Those ungrateful skivs.
Kaz said nothing. Just watched the crowd flow past the front of the hotel below, the gangs bunched in colorful swarms, calling insults to one another, cheering like it was some kind of holiday. Even after they'd gone by, their chants hung in the air. Maybe they would march all the way to the Stodhall.
What will happen now? Asked Kuwe. We'll be hunted by every Stodwatch grunt and barrel thug in the city until we're found, said Kaz. There's no way out of Ketterdam now. Certainly not with you in tow.
Can we just wait? Asked Kuwe. Here, with Mr. Fahey.
Wait for what? Kaz said. Someone to come to our rescue?
Jesper rested his head against the glass.
My father. They'll take him in, too. He'll be accused of harboring fugitives.
No, said Kuwe abruptly. No.
Give me to Vanek.
Absolutely not, said Nina. The boy cut his hand through the air sharply.
You saved me from the Fjerdens. If we do not act, then I will be captured anyway.
Then all of this was for nothing? Weiland asked, surprised at his own anger. The risks we took, what we accomplished at the ice court, everything Inej and Nina suffered to get us out?
But if I give myself up to Vanek, then the rest of you can go free, insisted Kuwe.
It doesn't work that way, kid, said Jesper.
Pekka's got his chance to take Kaz out with the rest of the barrel backing him. And Vanek sure as hell doesn't want us walking around free, not knowing what we do. This isn't just about you anymore.
Kuwe moaned and slumped down against the wall. He cast a baleful glance at Nina.
You should have killed me at the ice court.
Nina shrugged. But then Kaz would have killed me, and Matthias would have killed Kaz, and it would have gotten incredibly messy.
I can't believe we broke out of the ice court, but we're trapped in our own town, Weiland said. It didn't seem right.
Yup, said Jesper. We are well and truly cooked.
Kaz drew a circle on the window with one leather-gloved finger.
Not quite, he said. I can get the Stadwatch to stand down.
No, said Inej.
I'll give myself up.
But Kue,
said Nina.
The Stadwatch don't know about Kue. They think they're looking for Weilen. So I'll tell them Weilen is dead. I'll tell them I killed him.
Are you out of your mind? Said Jesper.
Kaz, said Inej. They'll send you to the gallows.
They'll have to give me a trial first. You'll rot in prison before that happens, said Matthias. Van Eck will never give you a chance to speak in a courtroom. You really think they've built a cell that can hold me?
Van Eck knows just how good you are with locks, Inej said angrily. You'll die before you ever reach the jailhouse.
This is ridiculous, said Jesper. You're not taking the fall for us. No one is. We'll split up. We'll go in pairs, find a way past the blockades, hide out somewhere in the countryside. This is my city, said Kaz. I'm not leaving it with my tail between my legs.
Jesper released a growl of frustration.
If this is your city, what's left of it? You gave up your shares in the Crow Club and Fifth Harbor. You don't have a gang anymore. Even if you did escape, Van Eck and Rollins would sick the Stadwatch and half the barrel on you again. You can't fight them all. Watch me.
Damn it, Kaz.
What are you always telling me? Walk away from a losing hand. I'm giving you a way out. Take it.
Why are you treating us like a bunch of yellow-bellied skivs?
Kaz turned on him.
You're the one getting ready to bolt, Jesper. You just want me to run with you so you don't have to feel so bad about it. For all your love of a fight, you're always the first to talk about running for cover.
Because I want to stay alive.
For what? Kaz said, his eyes glittering. So you can play another hand at the tables? So you can find another way to disappoint your father and let down your friends? Have you told your father you're the reason he's going to lose his farm? Have you told Inej you're the reason she almost died at the end of Umen's knife? That we all almost died?
Jesper's shoulders bunched, but he didn't back down.
I made a mistake.
I let my bad get the best of my good, but for saints' sake, Kaz, how long are you going to make me pay for a little forgiveness?
What do you think my forgiveness looks like, Jordy?
Who the hell is Jordy?
For the briefest moment, Kaz's face went slack, a confused, almost frightened look in his dark eyes, there and gone, so fast Weiland wondered if he'd imagined it.
What do you want from me?
Kaz snarled, his expression just as closed, just as cruel as ever.
My trust? You had it, and you shot it to pieces because you couldn't keep your mouth shut.
Doesn't that count for anything?
Jesper threw up his hands.
I can't win with you.
No one can.
That's right. You can't win. You think you're a gambler, but you're just a born loser. Fights. Cards, boys, girls. You'll keep playing until you lose, so for once in your life, just walk away.
Jesper swung first. Kaz dodged right, and then they were grappling. They slammed into the wall, knocked heads, drew apart in a flurry of punches and grabs. Weiland turned to Inej, expecting her to object, for Matthias to separate them, for someone to do something. But the others just backed up, making room. Only Kue showed any kind of distress. Jesper and Kaz swung around, crashed into the mechanism of the clock, righted themselves. It wasn't a fight. It was a brawl. graceless, a tangle of elbows and fists.
"Gezin and his works! Someone stop them!"
Weiland said desperately.
"Jesper hasn't shot him," Nina said.
"Kaz isn't using his cane," said Inej.
"You think they can't kill each other with their bare hands?"
They were both bleeding. Jesper from a cut on his lip and Kaz from somewhere near his brow. Jesper's shirt was halfway over his head and Kaz's sleeve was tearing at the seam. The trapdoor sprang open and Colm Fahey's head emerged. His ruddy cheeks went even redder.
"Jesper Llewellyn Fahey, that is enough," he roared.
Jesper and Kaz both startled, and then, to Weiland's shock, they stepped away from each other, looking guilty.
"Just what is going on here?" Colm said. "I thought you were friends."
Jesper ran a hand over the back of his neck, looking like he wanted to vanish through the floorboards.
We were having a disagreement."
"I can see that. I have been very patient with all of this, Jesper. But I am at my limit. I want you down here before I count 10, or I will tan your hide so you don't sit for 2 weeks."
Colm's head vanished back down the stairs. The silence stretched. Then Nina giggled.
"You are in so much trouble."
Jesper scowled.
"Matthias, Nina let Cornelis Smeet grope her bottom."
Nina stopped laughing.
"I am going to turn your teeth inside out."
"That is physically impossible."
"I just raised the dead. Do you really want to argue with me?"
Inej cocked her head to one side.
"Jesper Llewellyn Fahey?"
"Shut up," said Jesper. "It's a family name."
Inej made a solemn bow.
"Whatever you say, Llewellyn."
"Kaz," Jesper said tentatively, but Kaz was staring into the middle distance. Weiland thought he knew that look.
"Is that?"
asked Weiland.
"Scheming face," said Jesper.
Matthias nodded.
"Definitely." "I know how to do it," Kaz said slowly. "How to get Kuwe out, get the Grisha out, get our money, beat Vanek, and give that son of a bitch Pekka Rollins everything he has coming to him."
Nina raised a brow.
"Is that all?"
"How?"
asked Inej.
"This whole time, we've been playing Vanek's game. We've been hiding. We're done with that. We're going to stage a little auction, right out in the open."
He turned to face them, and his eyes gleamed flat and black as a shark's.
"And since Kuwe is so eager to sacrifice himself, he's going to be the prize."
Part 5. Kings and Queens.
24. Jesper. At the base of the iron staircase, Jesper tried to straighten his shirt and dab the blood from his lip, though at this point he figured it wouldn't matter if he showed up in nothing but his skivvies. His father was no fool, and that ridiculous story Weiland had concocted to cover for Jesper's mistakes had worn faster than a cheap suit. His father had seen their wounds. He'd heard about the botched plans. He knew they weren't students or victims of a swindle. So what now? "Close your eyes and hope the firing squad has good aim," he thought bleakly. "Jesper," he whirled. Inej was right behind him. He hadn't heard her approach, but that was no surprise. "Have you told Inej you're the reason she almost died at the end of Umen's knife?" Well, Jesper figured, he'd be doing a lot of apologizing this morning. Best get to it. "Inej, I'm sorry." "I didn't come looking for an apology, Jesper. You have a weak spot. We all have weak spots." "What's yours?" "The company I keep," she said, with a slight smile. You don't even know what I did. Then tell me. Jesper looked at his shoes. They were miserably scuffed. I was in deep with Pekka Rollins for a lot of Krug. His goons were putting the pressure on, so I told them I was leaving town, but that I was about to come into a big score. I didn't say anything about the ice court, I swear, but it was enough for Rollins to put the puzzle together and prepare an ambush. She sighed. And Kaz has been punishing you for it ever since. Jesper shrugged. Maybe I deserve it. Do you know the Suli have no words to say, I'm sorry? What do you say when you step on someone's foot? I don't step on people's feet. You know what I mean. We say nothing. We know the slight was not deliberate. We live in tight quarters, traveling together. There's no time to constantly be apologizing for existing. But when someone does wrong, when we make mistakes, we don't say we're sorry. We promise to make amends. I will. Mati and Sheba Yalu. This action will have no echo. It means we won't repeat the same mistakes. That we won't continue to do harm. I'm not going to get you stabbed again. I got stabbed because I let my guard down. You betrayed your crew. I didn't mean... It would be better if you had meant to betray us, Jesper. I don't want an apology. Not until you can promise that you won't keep making the same mistake. Jesper rocked lightly on his heels. I don't know how to do that. There's a wound in you. And the tables, the dice, the cards. They feel like medicine. They soothe you. Put you right for a time. But they're poison, Jesper. Every time you play, you take another sip. You have to find some other way to heal that part of yourself. She laid her hand on his chest. Stop treating your pain like it's something you imagined. If you see the wound is real, then you can heal it. A wound. He opened his mouth to deny it, but something stopped him. For all his trouble at the tables, and away from them, Jesper had always thought himself as lucky, happy, easygoing, the kind of guy people wanted around. But what if he'd been bluffing this whole time? Angry and frightened. That's what the Fjärden had called him. What had Matthias and Inej seen in Jesper that he didn't understand? I'll try. It was the most he could offer right now. He took her hand in his, pressed a kiss to her knuckles. It may take me a while before I can say those words. His lips tilted in a grin. And not just because I can't speak Suli. I know, she said. But think on it. She glanced toward the sitting room. Just tell him the truth, Jesper. You'll both be glad to know where you stand. Every time I think about doing that, I feel like hurling myself out a window. He hesitated. Would you tell your parents the truth? Would you tell them everything you've done? Everything that happened? I don't know, Inej admitted. But I'd give anything to have the choice. Jesper found his father in the purple sitting room, a cup of coffee in his big hands. He'd piled the dishes back onto the silver tray. You don't have to clean up after us, Dad. Someone does. He took a sip of his coffee. Sit down, Jess. Jesper didn't want to sit. That desperate itch was crackling through his body. All he wanted was to run straight to the barrel as fast as his legs could carry him and throw himself down in the first gambling parlor he could find. If he hadn't thought he'd be arrested or shot before he got halfway there, he just might have. He sat. Inej had left the unused vials of the chemical weevil on the table. He picked one up, fiddling with the stopper. His father leaned back, watching him with those stern gray eyes. Jesper could see every line and freckle on his face in the clear morning light. There was no swindle, was there? That shoe boy lied for you. They all did. Jesper clasped his hands to keep them from fidgeting. You'll both be glad to know where you stand. Jesper wasn't sure that was true, but he had no more options. There have been a lot of swindles, but I was usually on the swindling side. A lot of fights. I was usually on the winning side. A lot of card games. He looked down at the white crescents of his fingernails. I was usually on the losing side. The loan I gave you for your studies, I got in deep with the wrong people. I lost at the tables, and I kept losing, so I kept borrowing. I thought I could find a way to dig myself out. Why didn't you just stop? Jesper wanted to laugh. He had pleaded with himself, screamed at himself to stop. It isn't like that. There's a wound in you. Not for me. I don't know why. Calm pinched the bridge of his nose. He looked so weary. This man who could work from sunrise to sunset without ever complaining. I never should have let you leave home. Duh. I knew the farm wasn't for you. I wanted you to have something better. Then why not send me to Ravka? Jesper said before he could think better of it. Coffee sloshed from Calm's cup. Out of the question. Why? Why should I send my son to some foreign country to fight and die in their wars? A memory came to Jesper, sharp as a mule kick. The dusty man was standing at the door again. He had the girl with him, the girl who had lived because his mother had died. He wanted Jesper to come with them. Leonie is Zoa. She has the gift too, he said. There are teachers in the West, past the frontier. They could train them. Jesper doesn't have it, Colm said. But his mother? He doesn't have it. You have no right to come here. Are you sure? Has he been tested? You come back on this land, and I'll consider it an invitation to put a bullet between your eyes. You go, and you take that girl with you. No one here has the gift, and no one here wants it. He slammed the door in the dusty man's face. Jesper remembered his father standing there, taking great heaving breaths. What did they want, da? Nothing. Am I Zoa? Jesper had asked. Am I Grisha? Don't say those words in this house. Not ever. But that's what killed your mother. Do you understand? That's what took her from us. His father's voice was fierce, his gray eyes hard as quartz. I won't let it take you too. Then his shoulders slumped as if the words were being torn from him. He'd said, do you want to go with them? You can go. If that's what you want, I won't be mad. Jesper had been 10. He'd thought of his father alone on the farm, coming home to an empty house every day, sitting by himself at the table every night, no one to make him burnt biscuits. No, he'd said, I don't want to go with them. I want to stay with you. Now, he rose from his chair, unable to sit still any longer, and paced the length of the room. Jesper felt like he couldn't breathe. He couldn't be here anymore. His heart hurt. His head hurt. Guilt and love and resentment were all tangled up inside him, and every time he tried to unravel the knot in his gut, it just got worse. He was ashamed of the mess he'd made, of the trouble he'd brought to his father's door. But he was mad, too. And how could he be angry at his father? The person who loved him most in the world, who had worked to give him everything he had, the person he'd take a bullet for any day of the week. This action will have no echo. I'll find a way to make amends, though. I want to be a better person. A better son. I didn't raise you to be a gambler, Jesper. I certainly didn't raise you to be a criminal. Jesper released a bitter huff of laughter. I love you, Da. I love you with all my lying, thieving, worthless heart. But yes, you did.
What?
Sputtered Calm. You taught me to lie.
To keep you safe.
Jesper shook his head. I had a gift. You should have let me use it. Colm banged his fist against the table. It's not a gift, it's a curse. It would have killed you the same way it killed your mother. So much for the truth. Jesper strode to the door. If he didn't get shut of this place, he was going to jump right out of his skin. I'm dying anyway, Da. I'm just doing it slow. Jesper strode down the hall. He didn't know where to go or what to do with himself. Go to the barrel, stay off the stave. There's a game to be had somewhere, just be inconspicuous. Sure, as a mini, as tall as a modestly ambitious tree, and carrying a price on his head wouldn't be noticed at all. He remembered what Kuei had said about Grisha who didn't use their power, being tired and sickly. He wasn't physically sick. That was true enough. But what if Matthias was right, and Jesper had a different kind of sickness? What if all that power inside him just liked to bounce around looking for some place to go? He passed an open doorway, then doubled back. Weiland was sitting at a white lacquer piano in the corner, listlessly plunking out one solitary note. I like that, he said. Has a great beat. You can dance to it. Weiland looked up, and Jesper sauntered into the room, hands swinging restlessly at his sides. He circled its perimeter, taking in all the furnishings. Purple silk wallpaper flocked in silver fishes, silver chandeliers, a cabinet full of blown glass ships. Saints, this place is hideous. Weiland shrugged and played another note. Jesper leaned on the piano. Want to get out of here? Weiland looked up at him, his gaze speculative. He nodded. Jesper stood up a little straighter. Really? Weiland held his gaze. The air in the room seemed to change, as if it had become suddenly combustible. Weiland rose from the piano bench. He took a step toward Jesper. His eyes were a clear, luminous gold, like sun through honey. Jesper missed the blue, the long lashes, the tangle of curls. But if the merchling had to be wrapped up in a different package, Jesper could admit he liked this one plenty. And did any of that really matter when Weiland was looking at him like that? Head tilted to the side, a slight smile playing over his lips. He looked almost bold. What had changed? Had he been afraid Jesper wouldn't make it out of the scrape on Black Veil? Was he just feeling lucky to be alive? Jesper wasn't sure he cared. He'd wanted distraction, and here it was. Weiland's grin broadened. His brow lifted. If that wasn't an invitation... Well, hell, Jesper muttered. He closed the distance between them and took Weiland's face in his hands. He moved slowly, deliberately, kept the kiss quiet. The barest brush of his lips giving Weiland the chance to pull away if he wanted to. But he didn't. He drew closer. Jesper could feel the heat from Weiland's body against his. He slid his hand to the back of Weiland's neck, tilting his head back, asking for more. He felt greedy for something. He wanted to kiss Weiland since he'd first seen him stirring chemicals in that gruesome tannery. Ruddy curls, damp with the heat. Skin so delicate, it looked like it would bruise if you breathed on it too hard. He looked like he'd fallen into the wrong story, a prince turned pauper. From then on, Jesper had been stuck somewhere between the desire to taunt the pampered little merchling into another blush and the urge to flirt him into a quiet corner just to see what might happen. But sometime during their hours at the ice court, that curiosity had changed. He'd felt the tug of something more, something that came to life in Weiland's unexpected courage, in his wide-eyed, generous way of looking at the world. It made Jesper feel like a kite on a tether, lifted up and then plummeting down, and he liked it. So where was that feeling now? Disappointment flooded through him. Is it me? Jesper thought. Am I out of practice? He pushed closer, letting the kiss deepen. seeking that rising, falling, reckless sensation, moving Weiland back against the piano. He heard the keys clank against one another. Soft, discordant music. Appropriate, he thought. And then, if I can think about metaphors at a time like this, something is definitely wrong. He pulled back, dropped his hands, feeling unspeakably awkward. What did you say after a terrible kiss? He never had cause to wonder. That was when he saw Kuwe standing in the doorway, mouth open, eyes wide and shocked. What? Jesper asked. Do the shoe not kiss before noon? I wouldn't know, Kuwe said sourly. Not Kuwe. Oh, saints, Jesper groaned. That wasn't Kuwe in the doorway. It was Weiland Van Eck, budding demolitions expert and wayward rich kid. And that meant he'd just kissed. The real Kuwe plunked that same listless note on the piano, grinning shamelessly up at him through thick black lashes. Jesper turned back to the door. Weiland, he began. Kaz wants us in the sitting room. But Weiland was already gone. Jesper stared at the empty doorway. How could he have made a mistake like that? Weiland was taller than Kuwe. His face was narrower, too. If Jesper hadn't been so riled up and jittery after the fight with Kaz and the argument with his father, he would never have confused them. And now he ruined everything. Jesper jabbed an accusing finger at Kuwe. You should have said something. Kuwe shrugged. You were very brave on Black Veil. Since we're all probably going to die... Damn it, Jesper cursed, stalking toward the door. You are a very good kisser, called Kuwe after him. Jesper turned. How good is your courage, really? Fairly good. Okay, then. I hope you understand exactly what I mean when I say... You are definitely more trouble than you're worth. Kuwe beamed, looking entirely too pleased with himself. Kaz seems to think I'm worth a great deal now. Jesper rolled his eyes skyward. You fit right in here.
25. Matthias. They assembled once again in the suite's sitting room. At Nina's request, Combe had ordered another stack of waffles and a bowl of strawberries and cream. A mirror covered most of the suite's far wall, and Matthias could not stop his gaze from straying to it. It was like looking into another reality. Jesper had slipped off his boots and was seated on the carpet, knees tucked up to his chest, casting furtive glances at Weiland, who had settled on the couch and seemed to be deliberately ignoring him. Inej, perched on the windowsill, her balance so perfect it made her appear weightless, a bird poised to take flight. Kuwe had wedged himself into the crook of the settee, one of his notebooks open beside him, and Kaz sat in a high-backed purple chair, his bad leg propped on the low table, cane leaning against his thigh. He'd somehow seen to the torn sleeve of his shirt. Nina was curled up next to Matthias on the couch, her head resting on his shoulder, her feet tucked beneath her, fingers stained with strawberry juice. He felt strange sitting this way. In Fjerda, even a husband and wife showed little affection in public. They held hands and might dance at a public ball. But he liked it, and though he could not quite relax, he couldn't bear the thought of her moving away from him. It was Combe's solid presence that transformed the image in the mirror. He made the people in the reflection seem less dangerous, as if they weren't the team that had broken into the ice court and bested the Fjerdan military with little more than their wits and nerves, only a bunch of children worn out after a particularly brutal birthday party.
All right, said Nina, licking strawberry juice from her fingers in a way that thoroughly defeated Matthias's ability to form a rational thought. When you say an auction, you don't actually mean...
Kuwe is going to sell himself.
Are you mad?
I'd probably be happier if I was, said Kaz. He rested one gloved hand on his cane. Any Kerch citizen and any free citizen who travels to Kerch has the right to sell his own indenture. It isn't just the law, it's trade, and there's nothing more holy in Kerch. Kuwei Yulbo has the sacred right, as sanctioned by Gazin, god of industry and commerce, to submit his life to the will of the market. He can offer his service at auction.
You want him to sell himself to the highest bidder? Inej said incredulously.
To our highest bidder. We're going to fix the outcome so Kuwei gets his fondest wish. A life sipping tea from a samovar in Ravka.
My father will never allow it, said Wylan.
Van Eck will be powerless to stop it. The auction of an indenture is protected by the highest laws in the city, secular and religious. Once Kuwei declares his contract open, no one can stop the auction until bidding is closed.
Nina was shaking her head. If we announce an auction, the Shu will know exactly when and where to find him.
This is not Ravka, said Kaz. This is Kerch. Trade is sacred, protected by law. The Merchant Council are duty-bound to make sure an auction proceeds without interference. The Stodwatch will be out in force, and the auction statutes demand that the Council of Tides provide their assistance too. The Merchant Council, the Stodwatch, the Tides, all required to protect Kuwei.
Kuwei set his notebook down.
The Shu may still have Parem and fabricators.
That's right, said Jesper. If that's true, they can make all the gold they want. There would be no way to outbid them.
That's assuming they have fabricators in the city already. Van Eck has done the courtesy of blockading the harbor.
Even so, let me worry about the Shu, said Kaz. I can control the bidding, but we'll need to make contact with the Ravkins again. They'll have to know what we're planning, at least part of it.
I can get through to the embassy, said Inej, if Nina will write the message.
The streets are closed down by barricades, protested Wylan.
But not the rooftops, Inej replied.
Inej, said Nina, don't you think you should tell them a bit more about your new friend?
Yeah, said Jesper. Who's this new acquaintance who poked a bunch of holes in you?
Inej glanced through the window. There's a new player on the field, a mercenary hired by Pekka Rollins.
You were defeated in single combat? Matthias asked in surprise. He had seen the Wraith fight. It would be no small thing to best her.
Mercenary is a little bit of an understatement, said Nina. She followed Inej onto the high wire and then threw knives at her.
Not knives exactly, said Inej.
Pointy death doilies?
Inej rose from the sill. She reached into her pocket and let a pile of what looked like small silver suns clatter onto the table.
Kaz leaned forward and picked one up. Who is she?
Her name is Dunyasha, Inej said. She called herself the White Blade and a variety of other things. She's very good.
How good? Asked Kaz.
Better than me.
I've heard of her, said Matthias. Her name came up in an intelligence report that Druskala gathered on Ravka.
Ravka? Inej said. She said she was trained in Amrat Gen.
She claims she has Lanskov blood and that she's a contender for the Ravkan throne.
Nina released a hoot of laughter.
You can't be serious.
We considered backing her claim to undermine Nikolai Lanskov's regime.
Smart, said Kaz.
Evil,
said Nina.
Matthias cleared his throat. He's a new king, vulnerable. There are some questions regarding his own lineage, but the report suggested that Dunyasha is erratic, possibly delusional. We determined she was too unpredictable for such a venture.
Pekka could have had her follow us from Black Vale last night,
Inej said.
Do we know how Pekka found the hideout?
Nina asked.
One of his people must have spotted one of us, Kaz replied. That's all it would take.
Matthias wondered if it was better that they couldn't be sure who was responsible. That way, no one had to bear the guilt or the blame.
Dunyasha had the advantage of surprise, said Inej. If the hotel is still uncompromised, I can get to the embassy and back unseen.
Good, said Kaz, but the answer didn't come as quickly as Matthias might have expected.
He fears for her,
Matthias thought, and he does not like it. For once, he could sympathize with the Demjin.
There is another problem, said Nina. Matthias, cover your ears.
No.
Fine. I'll just have to ensure your loyalty later.
She whispered in his ear.
There's a very large bathtub off the master bedroom.
Nina.
It was just an observation.
Nina plucked the remnants of a waffle from the tray and said,
Ravka can't win the auction. We're broke.
Oh, said Matthias. I knew that.
You did not.
You think Fjerda isn't aware the Ravkan coffers are empty? Nina scowled.
You could have at least pretended to be surprised.
Ravka's financial woes are no secret. Its treasury was depleted from years of mismanagement by the Lanstov kings and fighting on both of its borders. The civil war didn't help, and the new king has borrowed heavily from the Kerch banks. If we go through with the auction, Ravka won't be able to bid competitively. Kaz shifted his bad leg. That's why the Kerch Merchant Council is going to bankroll them. Jesper burst out laughing.
Fantastic! Any chance they want to buy me a solid gold bowler hat while they're at it?
That's unlawful, said Wylan. The council are responsible for running the auction. They can't interfere with its outcome.
Of course not, said Kaz, and they know it. Kuei and his father approached the merchant council looking for aid, but they were so afraid of compromising their neutrality, they refused to act. Van Eck saw an opportunity, and he's been operating behind their backs ever since. Kaz settled more deeply in his chair. What has Van Eck been planning all along?
He's been buying up Jurda farms so that when the secret of Jurda Parem is unleashed, he'll control the Jurda supply. He wins no matter who has Kuei. So, think like him. Think like a merch. When Kuei Yulbo, son of Bo Yulbayur, announces the auction, the council will know that the secret of Parem could become public at any time. They'll finally be free to act, and they'll be looking for opportunities to secure their fortunes and Kerch's position in the world economy. They can't involve themselves in the auction, but they can guarantee they make a lot of money, whatever the outcome.
By buying up Jurda,
said Wylan.
Exactly.
We set up a Jurda consortium, a chance for willing investors to make a fine dime off the world going to hell. We bring the council an opportunity to let their greed do the rest. Wylan nodded, his face growing eager.
The money never goes to the consortium. We funnel it to Ravka so they can afford to bid on Kuei.
Something like that, said Kaz. And we take a little percentage, just like the banks do.
But who's going to shill? Jesper said. Van Eck has seen all our faces except Nina and Specht.
Even if one of us somehow got tailored or we brought on another person, the Merchant Council isn't just going to turn over their money to a newcomer with no real credentials.
How about a Jurda farmer who's been holed up in the most expensive suite in Ketterdam?
Colm Fahey looked up from his coffee.
Me?
No way, Kaz, said Jesper. Absolutely not.
He knows Jurda. He speaks Kerch and Zemini. And he looks the part.
He has an honest face, Jesper said bitterly.
You weren't keeping him safe, stashing him in this hotel. You were setting him up.
I was building us an out.
A hedge of your own?
Yes.
You are not bringing my father into this.
He's already in it, Jess. You brought him into it when you had him mortgage his farm to pay for your degree in wasting money.
No, repeated Jesper. Van Eck is going to make the connection between Colm Fahey and Jesper Fahey. He isn't an idiot.
But there is no Colm Fahey staying at the Geldrenner. Colm Fahey rented rooms in a little university district inn. And according to the Harbormaster's manifest, he left town several nights ago. The man staying here is registered under the name Johannes Reitveld.
Who the hell is that? Asked Nina.
He's a farmer from a town near Liege. His family's been there for years. He has holdings in Kerch and in Navi Zem.
But who is he really? Said Jesper.
That doesn't matter. Think of him as a figment of the Merchant Council's imagination, a wonderful dream come to life to help them scrape some profit from the disaster of Parem. Colm put his cup down.
I'll do it.
Da, you don't know what you're agreeing to.
I'm already harboring fugitives. If I'm going to aid, I may as well abet.
If this goes wrong...
What do I have to lose, Jess? My life is you and the farm. This is the only way I can protect both of those things.
Jesper shoved off from the floor, pacing back and forth in front of the windows.
This is insanity, he said, scrubbing his hands over the back of his neck. They'll never fall for it.
We don't ask for too much from any of them, said Kaz. That's the trick. We set a low floor to enter the fund, say 2 million kruga. And then we let them wait. The Shuar here, the Fjerdins, the Ravkins, the council will start to panic. If I had to bet, I'd say we'll have 5 million from each council member by the time we're through.
There are 13 council members, said Jesper. That's 65 million kruga.
Maybe more.
Matthias frowned.
Even with all the Stadwatch at the auction and the presence of the Council of Tides, can we really guarantee Kuwei's safety?
Unless you have a unicorn for him to ride away on, there is no scenario that guarantees Kuwei's safety.
I wouldn't count on protection from the Council of Tides either, said Nina. Have they ever appeared in public?
25 years ago, said Kaz.
And you think they're going to show up to protect Kuwei now? We can't send him into a public auction alone.
Kuwei won't be alone. Matthias and I will be with him.
Everyone there knows your faces, even if you had some kind of disguise.
No disguise. The Merchant Council are considered his representatives, but Kuwei has the right to choose his own protection for the auction. We'll be up there on stage with him.
The stage?
Auctions are held at the Church of Barter, right in front of the altar.
What could be more holy?
It's perfect. An enclosed space with multiple points of entry and easy access to a canal.
Nina shook her head. Kaz, as soon as Matthias steps on that stage, half the Fjerdin delegation will recognize him. And you're the most wanted man in Ketterdom. If you show up at that auction, you'll both be arrested.
They can't touch us until after the auction.
And then what? Said Inej.
There's going to be one hell of a distraction.
There has to be another way, said Jesper.
What if we tried making a deal with Rollins? Wylan pleated the edge of his napkin. We don't have anything to offer.
No more deals, said Kaz. I never should have gone to Rollins in the first place.
Jesper's brows rose.
Are you actually admitting you made a mistake?
We needed capital, he said.
His eyes slid briefly to Inej.
And I'm not sorry for it, but it wasn't the right move. The trick to beating Rollins is never sit down at the table with him. He's the house. He has the resources to play until your luck runs out.
All the same, said Jesper, if we're going up against the Kirch government, the gangs of the Barrel, and the Shoe.
And the Fjerdins, added Matthias, and the Zemini, and the Kalish, and whoever else shows up when the auction is announced. The embassies are full, and we don't know how far the rumors of Parem have reached.
We're going to need help, said Nina.
I know, said Kaz, straightening his sleeves. That's why I'm going to the Slat.
Jesper stopped moving. Inej shook her head. They all stared. What are you talking about? Said Nina. There's a price on your head. Everyone in the Barrel knows it.
You saw Per Haskell and the dregs down there, said Jesper. You think you can talk the old man into propping you up when the whole city is about to come down on you like a sack of bricks? You know he doesn't have the stones for that.
I know, said Kaz. But we need a bigger crew for this job.
Demjin, this is not a risk worth taking, said Matthias,
surprised to find he actually meant it.
When this is all over, when Vanek has been put in his place... When Rollins goes running and the money is paid, these will still be my streets. I can't live in a city where I can't hold up my head.
If you have a head to hold up, said Jesper. I've taken knives, bullets, and too many punches to count. All for a little piece of this town, said Kaz.
This is the city I bled for, and if Kedardam has taught me anything, it's that you can always bleed a little more. Nina reached for Matthias's hand.
The Grisha are still stuck at the embassy, Cass. I know you don't give a damn, but we have to get them out of the city.